Today we have a special guest, Jonathan Flores, host of the Run With Purpose podcast and man behind Flores.run, a website that tracks Jonathan's marathon running across all 50 states. How are you today?
Not too bad. Thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, thanks for joining me. I'm really excited. A fellow podcaster and runner, I think this was made to happen.
Yeah. Well, we've been trying for a while. Schedules just don't align sometimes.
You know, for people that are new to the podcast industry, scheduling is a huge element of a podcast host job. You know, just aligning schedules, the preparation, the post-production. It's definitely tough. But I'm glad we made it here and looking forward to hearing about your story. So, you know, I just start off all my interviews with a quick question, your age and your day job, just to hear where you're coming from in life.
Yeah. So I am 33 years young, be 34 this summer, and I am a data analyst by trade, but I also run a nonprofit and I also have a photography business. I do a little bit of everything creative wise.
I love that. Get your hands wet in a few different things.
Exactly.
Keeps things interesting at the end of the day, right?
Right. Why would you only want to do one thing? I saw someone I talked to in an interview said it's something like multi-potentialite or something like that. Like you have like all of these things you're going after. You can't just stick with one. Like it's just that creative mindset. It's like, hey, what else can I do? I'm like, well, I have a microphone. Let's start a podcast. And yes, so that kind of stuff.
That's it. Hey, I like that mentality. And it's definitely a go-getter mentality, which I think a lot of marathon runners have at the end of the day. So yeah, tell me a little bit about your very first marathon race. Let's go back in history. What was it and what prompted you to start marathon running?
Yeah, it's funny because I actually just recently hit 10 years since my first race, which is just like crazy to think of that it's been a decade of me running marathons. But it was a Flying Pig marathon in Cincinnati. And the Flying Pig is a stupid hilly race that everyone says is a great first time race, but it's not great because of the course or anything like that. It's not a fast course, but it's great from like crowd support and energy and all of that, which is really what first timers, I would say, really need. You don't really want a flat course, you want a fun course. But that was absolutely nuts. When I started it, I moved from South Florida to Columbus, Ohio, where I'm at now. And I needed something to do outside. Like winter sucked. And I was like, I need to get outside. And I played golf in Florida, but golf is way too expensive in Ohio. Like, this is absolutely ridiculous. Like, why is anyone paying this much money to go golfing? I don't understand this. So I was like, well, I need something to do outside. Like, what can I do that's outside? And I was like, maybe I'll try this running thing. It's a jogging, it's a soft J. But it's the idea. I was like, well, how can I do this? I was like, I'll just sign up for a 5K. And within a year of me starting to run, I ran my first marathon because I just got hooked. I was like 5K, 10K, you know, 10 miler, half marathon. And right after the half marathon, I was just like, I'm obviously going to do this twice. Like, you just like, I don't know why it didn't make sense to everybody else. Of like, yeah, no, I'm just going to do double this distance that, you know, the distance that has me on the couch right now, like peeled over that, I'm going to do two of those. And it was a lot of the naysayer attitude where I was just like, nope, I'm doing it. Let's figure out how to make it happen.
I love that. So sort of the progression of the distances that kept you going, and I guess the runner's high and just sort of like, why not? Right.
Yeah. It's one of those things where you're like, you know, you start losing weight, you start feeling better. Everything just starts like clicking. You're like, okay, wait a second. I'm getting faster. Things are going great. Like nothing's going to stop me now. And it's like, all right, let's see how far I can run and see how fast I can get there. And yeah, I mean, within a year, it's still crazy. Cause I started running, I think it was May 5th was the first day I basically went out on the road running. And my first marathon was May 1st.
Wow. Amazing. So 1 year later, you're at the Flying Pig. Do you know why it's called the Flying Pig?
There is a reason. And I don't know. I think it has something to do with the idea of when pigs fly. Kind of thing. Like I'll do that when pigs fly. And there's also like a Cincinnati, something with pigs in Cincinnati, I'm pretty sure. But
we'll look it up and throw it in the show notes. Yeah. Awesome. Now I am curious, what was that race like, you know, as sort of a smaller Midwestern type race? I've only done a few of the major marathons. So I'm curious, what was sort of the atmosphere like and the course in general and sort of your feeling once you finished that marathon being your first one?
Yeah, it's an interesting concept. Some of these smaller races, we call it, you know, there's like, I'd say there's 13,000 total people on the course, but about 10,000 of those were half marathoners or relay runners. So you're only ended up with like a field of about 3,000 runners. And, you know, those later miles, it shows when you're just like, oh, there's no one near me. I'm in the middle of a highway. Because in the Flying Pig, you like get on an on-ramp on the highway and then you get off the next exit. It's the most crazy thing.
Most of the race on the highway or in the city?
It's in the city and like through neighborhoods. You like start in downtown. You actually start in downtown Cincinnati. You cross over into Kentucky and then you cross back over into Ohio and then go through neighborhoods and stuff like that. But then you just hit this like brief like mile on the highway. It's real weird. But that race was interesting because I was actually a pacer for a local running club and I was pacing an 8:30 pace was my goal. I was like 8:30. I was like, Bert, this is what I trained at. This is what I did. Anyone that knows how to do math, when you run a 5:05 marathon, you definitely went way off of your 8:30 pace.
Just a little bit.
Just a hair, just maybe by 3 minutes. And it was one of those things where it kind of like, it humbled me and put me back like, okay, this isn't something that I can just easily do. But it was one of those experiences that I'll never forget. I mean, I had an episode of my podcast where I literally talked, it's called My First One. And the idea is just talking about my first race. And I remember crossing that finish line and, you know, semi upset with myself, with the kind of the performance. I fell apart at like mile 16, which is not what you want to do when you're running a marathon, but like crossing the finish line and like seeing my wife cheering me on, like there's a picture that I have that I absolutely love. And you can tell like my eyes are just watering. Like I'm trying everything not to just break down and sob after finishing this race, just because it's like, you know, I realized how hard of a journey, you know, you train for 18 to 20 weeks and then all of a sudden it comes down to this one thing and it didn't go the way I hoped. And that kind of steered most of the things I do, kind of this like purpose and intentionality and goal setting and all of that kind of thing. But I think it was an experience that I needed to have. If I would have ran a 3:30 out there, I don't know if I'd run another one, or maybe I only want to run one or two more. Because it was like, all right, I set a goal and I just did it. Like, well, that wasn't as fun, but it's kind of the challenge. 2 years later, I went back and I was like, we're going to do this. And I ran like a 4:57. I was like, hey, it's under 5. It's faster. Still way too slow than I planned. But it was just like, I think it was that redemption kind of thing.
Yeah. As long as you're slowly improving, that's the key. And to your point, I think that's interesting that, you know, there are a lot of one and done marathon runners, which I find very interesting because I'm like, I just want to keep going. I want to do the next one. I want to find something else and I want to improve my PR. So it's almost like that was a blessing in disguise for you. Now, how did you choose to be a pacer for your very first marathon? Because I find that absurd.
So I was a pacer, not during the marathon though. So that's good. I wasn't screwing over other people while I was running. It was a local running club, like our weekly runs or whatever. They had pace people that basically said, hey, you're going to run 8:30s with this group or whatever the case might be. Mostly did it because I got a free pair of tennis shoes and a jacket. And I was like, oh, this is awesome. Like, yeah, I'll totally do this. And, you know, I nailed it in every training run, hit exactly the goals and then just fell apart during the race. But yeah, no, that would be super stupid to be like, first marathon, I'm going to pace these folks.
Yeah, I thought that was like unbelievable. I'm like, wow, you got some guts over there. First marathon pacing other people. I'm like, gosh, that's impressive. So how many marathons have you run since the Flying Pig?
A lot. I've done 39 states. I know that much. I've done a handful of 50Ks and additional marathons here in Ohio. So Ohio is the only one I've repeated. I think I did a count the other day. I think it's 46 or 47 marathon distance or longer.
Wow. Amazing. So let's talk about some of these other races. I'm very curious. I was looking through your website, florist.run. It's awesome. You have all these cool map graphics of all your runs, sort of a blog recap. You know, tell me about some of these other states that you went to that people might not have heard about, you know, like the Oregon, Timothy Lake race, or maybe West Virginia. You tell me which ones you want to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, I could talk about every single one of them because they all kind of mean something a little different to me. Like, there hasn't been a single race where I was just like, eh, like that was all right. There were some like crappy races, but I can remember like memorable things about them. Just because they were poorly ran doesn't like change my experience. But yeah, since you brought up Oregon, we can talk about that one. But yeah, Timothy Lake, right? That's what it was.
Yep, Timothy Lake.
So Timberlake.
Yeah, Timothy Lake.
I can't remember the name of it. I can tell you where it's at. I couldn't tell you what it was actually called, but it was an absolutely gorgeous race. The Timothy Lake views Mount Hood. So if you guys go to the website, you can see some of the pictures. On the opposite side of the lake, you can see Mount Hood in the distance. And that was basically what you saw, basically half of the loop that you were on. But that was an interesting race because we had just like most travel experiences. I was supposed to get into Oregon. Race was on a Saturday. Yes, race was on a Saturday. We flew out Thursday. We're supposed to get there early on Friday into Portland and just hang out and have some time. Well, that didn't happen because of weather. So they rerouted us to Dallas saying, hey, we'll get you to Dallas and then you might be able to catch a flight to Portland. We get on the flight to Dallas. When we get to Dallas, we're like, hey, we've got like 5 minutes to get across the airport. And it's like, I've never been that person that like ran across the airport, but I'm like, we had to run across the airport. And we get all the way there and they had some open seats. And my wife is very familiar with the airline industry because her dad was in it for so long. And they actually gave our paid seats to non-reservation kind of standby folks. And she was livid. And before we could actually get it figured out, they had closed the doors. And obviously once they closed the doors, that's the end of it. So we had to stay in Dallas that night. But then the next day, you know, we eventually make it to Portland. So I'm on very little sleep. I'm exhausted because we were up all night. Then the very next day, it's like, hey, let's go run a marathon. I'm like, sure, whatever. And wow. Yeah, just gorgeous views, mostly like soft packed trail. But it was interesting because a lot of the people there, it was a lot of their first time. They had multiple distances. And it was a lot of people's first time marathon out there, which was interesting to me that people chose like trails to do that.
That is interesting versus a road race.
Yeah, so it's you know, usually the road is where people end up, but it's like, hey, it was a beautiful scenery. So it was interesting trying to teach people how to run on single track and basically like, hey, if you need to pass, you need to let people know these things. You have to talk. And, you know, there's only two aid stations on the course. You're only getting aid every 4 miles, give or take, which, you know, for me doing trails and stuff like that, I understand that. It's like, okay, I know how to prepare for that. But, you know, usually first races, you don't want to go that long without having seeing anyone. And this again, another first time, you're on a trail, there's no one around, like you're just looping this lake. It's just people that are literally like camping and fishing with their families. So you're just running like morning and they're just eating breakfast and you're like, have a good day, I'll see you in 2 hours or whatever. And
that's amazing. Yeah,
those races are super fun.
Now that's a totally different experience there that I can't even imagine. How many people ran that one?
Maybe 150.
Wow, so small race. Now I'm curious about the aid stations because all the races I've run, you know, it's sort of funny. New York City was my first where there's an aid station every mile, right? And then
yeah, New York City's your first. You're definitely getting a different picture of what marathons are.
Such a different picture. I mean, I've done New York, Philly, and LA. So I'm talking big
city. Oh, okay.
But it's sort of funny you mentioned the aid stations because, you know, New York was my first. There's an aid station every single mile. So, you know, I could fill up on water, use the bathroom, whatnot. But then I get to Philly and it's, you know, every 2 or 3 miles. And I'm like, what's going on here? Where's my aid station? Where's the next porter potty at? And you're telling me for this one, there are how many aid stations? And how does that change your strategy and your preparation for the race?
So I'd like to say if I was a smart person, I would say it would change my preparation and how I actually do it, how I train, where I get fluid and stuff like that. Since I'm not a smart person, obviously you tell the amount of races I've done. I don't really change my training. I basically train with the idea that I'm only drinking or eating every 3 miles-ish. And then if there is more, great. If there's not, I just deal with it. You know, I finish races dehydrated, not good conditions, but you know, it happens. But it's once I did my first trail race, my first 50K, I really then understood kind of the importance of nutrition on the course, especially on trails when you only had it so far, like actually eating, you know, whether it's eating M&Ms or Chips Ahoy or pretzels or chips, or, you know, maybe just like a little shot of Coke, Coca-Cola. Let's be very clear. We're taking a little shot of Coca-Cola and just like a little bit of pick-me-up kind of thing to keep you going rather than, you know, when your first road race, it's like, no, you get your water. Like that's what you drink and it's fine. Actually the shirt I'm wearing is from the Berlin Marathon, and crazy Berlin. They like in the later miles, they do warm tea. So you actually get a styrofoam cup of warm tea. And I'm like, this seems not like a good idea. Obviously I'm in Berlin. I'm going to do it. I'm like, yeah. You're not going to tell me no.
You're there, right?
And then I think it was like mile 20, maybe not 21. They had like a Red Bull station and they were literally handing you like 16 ounce cups of Red Bull. Like a full Red Bull can was in this cup. And I'm like, you guys are wasting a ton of money. And also I can't drink this much Red Bull while I'm just like running.
Yeah. Like, maybe just horrible, honestly.
But yeah, you learn how to kind of get around that. And I think it's all just, like you said, in the training, it's just making sure you're kind of prepping for race day. With the amount of races I do, or I have done, it's been it's been interesting because I don't really have time to train really for the next race. It's probably been a few years since I've had the opportunity to be like, hey, let's dedicate a training cycle to a single race. It's like, no, we're going to train for these 12 weeks and then we're going to maintain for 10 more weeks because you have three races in those 10 weeks or whatever.
That's interesting. Now, I'm curious actually about that because I'm planning on once, you know, sort of the post-COVID world comes back, I want to get out there and I want to do a lot of marathons. What's your recommendation for spacing them out in between one another? Because, you know, you've done, you know, almost 50 plus. So what's your recommendation there?
It all depends on what your body's comfortable with. I've done back-to-backs multiple times where I do a Saturday race and then a Sunday race. I don't recommend that because that's, again, stupid.
It's a little insane. We had one of my previous guests did the Lake Tahoe triple marathon, which is three marathons in 3 days.
Yep. So
if you want to challenge.
I've been looking at that one because I needed two of those states. I needed, Arizona and Wyoming? It's Wyoming, Arizona, and Utah, maybe?
And it was just close to each other.
Yeah, they're like right there. It's like the trifecta or whatever. Yeah, that thing's, that's just nuts. But yeah, it's basically however you want to train the space mount. I always tell people, though, and it's an interesting thing, and no one has kind of proven me wrong, but I've told about this, is you always feel worse after a race the second day. So if I run on Saturday, I'm usually worse on Monday than I am on Sunday. So why don't I just run again on Sunday? Like, yes, your legs are going to be heavy. You don't have much, but if you properly fuel yourself, I mean, those races I did, what was the last one I did? Last year, maybe. No, 19. I did Connecticut and then Rhode Island. And literally we finished Connecticut. I had some food and then, you know, compression socks, compression pants, and started pounding carbs again and just started eating. We had some beer in Rhode Island. I was like eating everything I could possibly eat just to get as many calories in as I could. And yeah, you know, I probably around like mile 15, 16, you start feeling it, but it's like, yeah, at that point you're 37 miles in 2 days. Like, yeah, your body's going to hurt, but it's all the mentality thing. I mean, most of it's, you can do a lot more than your brain tells you you can. And when I did that first back-to-back, my first back-to-back was a 50K and then a marathon. And I actually PR'd the 50K by 30 minutes because I was like, I felt too good. And I was just like, I'm flying. My wife's like, you have a race tomorrow. Like, and you've literally never done this before. And I'm like, we'll figure it out. But yeah, I ran like a 5:35 or 5:38 50K. And then I ran a 5:08 marathon.
Wow. That's unbelievable. I can't believe you did that. I feel like that's impressive, and props to you for that. And you said you get some beer. I saw on your blog, it looks like beer is a running theme. Is that something you always enjoy post-race?
Yeah, it's a definite has to. And it can't be like the Mick Ultra or anything like that they give races. Like, that's just, I don't want more water because I had enough water on the course. I'm just like, I go for like the, I don't know if I'll offend anybody, like the trashiest thing I can find. Like, I want a PBR or something like that, where it's just like, you know what? America.
I like that. Hey, we'll reach out to PBR for a sponsorship on this.
That's right. Anything we can plug, I'll just plug all of the things.
All the beers, all the shoes, etc. Now, I am curious. I was looking at your website and this one caught my eye, the Utah Antelope Island Marathon. You remember that one?
Yeah.
Tell me about that, because that just looked absolutely stunning. And I'm curious, you know, do you usually choose, are you a big outdoors person? Are you choosing races, you know, sort of, we just talked about that one in Oregon, you know, this Antelope Island one. Are you looking for scenic destinations? And do you have a favorite scenic race that you ran?
I don't necessarily look for scenic, but to your point, I do like it. And all of these trips, all but a couple states my wife has been able to come with me. And we really make it like a vacation. Like for Utah, for example, we drove out to Utah from Ohio, like 26 hours or some nonsense. And then we spent a week in Utah, and then we were going to spend a week in Colorado and do a race out there as well. And really, we just kind of tag them around like things that we think would be super interesting. The one caveat I do have for races, and once I started this journey at the 50 states of marathons, was the marathon needs to support something. I did Rock and Roll Las Vegas, and I won't do another rock. I did Rock and Roll Vegas and Rock and Roll Nashville. And I won't do any races like that because they don't really help things. They say they do, but they're really just like, you have to raise money for your charity kind of thing. They're not the ones actually giving the money. So that's a stipulation I have. I have no shame reaching out to race directors and be like, where does this money go? Like, do you give a portion of this money away? And if they say, oh, we do that, you know, like they try to beat around the bush, I'm just like, thank you very much for your time. I'm not running a race. I don't care how much of a race I want to do. because of the, you know, how gorgeous it is or whatever the case may be, I just won't do it. So that's kind of, that's like my real classification. I'll get to your other questions, I promise. So no, Utah.
That's a great point, Jonathan, because I think running is actually one of those, it's sort of one of those few sports out there that it always, or most of the time, seems to have a charity element to it, which is, I find amazing. You know, I'm always seeing people fundraising for causes. You have teams out there. I'm running for Fred's team later this year in the New York City Marathon, which supports Memorial Sloan Kettering Hospital. And I find it amazing that runners are just, you know, they're really passionate about giving back to the community. And it's, I think that's a great point and something I'm going to do moving forward is make that stipulation as well.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing because it's I've been given this ability and gift to be able to run. And if this is my way of giving back, I mean, I started a nonprofit based off of this, you know, the Hangry. And the idea was we were doing a race and we were feeding those that were living with the issue of hunger and said, hey, how can we make a difference? And it literally started by us putting a 5K, 10K together. And then it's grown into what it is now, which is great. But yeah, I think runners are an interesting group because we have such influence among other runners. Things like this, where it's like, hey, that race looks super interesting. Can you tell me about it? Maybe I'll do that race. It's the same kind of thing of, hey, I'm doing this to support this cause. And people are like, all right, why not? Whatever it is, just tell me where to send the money. And that's a lot of the things with it. I wish I was on, I was prepping to run Boston last year before it was canceled with the charity with Team BMC. And it was the same kind of thing. The fundraiser coach was like, hey, you're going to like, people are going to donate because of you, not because of what it is. They just know you're involved with good things. So kind of push that out. And that's really all runners' case itself. But
And you know, Jonathan, let's talk about Hangry for a second. I was just checking out your website here. It's quite interesting. Tell us a little bit about the cause, how you started it. I mean, I'll be probably running this virtual in, what is it, May 21st coming up.
Yeah. Well, we actually, the signups ended for that. We're actually getting our stuff in. So yeah, sorry, maybe next time, but no, because we're basically the way Hangry operates in this race, we usually do obviously in-person races right now. It's a little tougher to do that. We could have, but we didn't want to lose money again like we did last year with permits and all that jazz. But basically, we only order the things that we need. So it's like, hey, who signs up? That's what we're ordering. We're saving money. We're feeding people. But yeah, Hangry, the idea was we kind of flipped the definition of hangry as people know it. Instead of like, hey, I'm hangry because I'm hungry. It's we're angry for those living with the issue of hunger. So we just flipped it on its side and said, hey, how can we help those living with the issue of hunger? Just this past January, we converted it into a 501c3. So we're now a charitable nonprofit. And really our whole purpose is helping those living with the issue of hunger, however we can do that. So my wife goes to the grocery store every single week with donations that we have recurring gifts and sponsors and stuff like that. So she goes shopping every single week to basically get stuff for the pantries that the pantries can't get. So our Kroger grocery store over here has like a clearance rack basically. And really they just had overstock and now they need to get rid of it. So she'll go and she'll buy $300 of spaghetti sauce that's marked 75% off. So it's really good stuff. We're not just giving people like just whatever's left over. And that's kind of Hangry's mission. It's like, I don't want to give people my leftovers. I want to be intentional and give it to them first. So, I mean, I'll have to send you a picture afterwards. My entire living room is just cereal and fruit snacks because I had like way too many cereals and boxes and fruit snacks. So my wife bought all of them. But she's known by the grocery store people now. Like they have a person come in to ring her out instead of using the self-checkout. Like it's absolutely nuts.
I mean, that's just an amazing cause, Jonathan. I mean, I love how you sort of took that concept also with the hunger and being angry about it and just split that. It's brilliant marketing, honestly, and just really good cause. I'll definitely be supporting it. And for all of our listeners out there, definitely check out Hangry as well for future running races, either virtually or in person, mostly in the Ohio area, I take it.
For now, our plan is to kind of move things around as we can. The idea is kind of getting Hangry ambassadors all around. So any listeners that are interested in it, you know, want to be a Hangry ambassador, whatever, reach out to me and we'll figure out how to make it work. I don't know how it's going to work, but I just talked to someone a few weeks ago and it says, I'm not too worried about the how. I'm just worried about the why. I know this is what I want to do because we're making a difference. We'll figure out the how later.
I love that. And if you need someone for the New York City chapter, let me know. And for all of our listeners out there, that's wearehangry.com to check that out for a few upcoming races they have here. So back to the marathon running here. Yeah. I'm curious, what was the most scenic race you've run? Because you've been all over the country. It's pretty amazing.
Yeah, that's a tough one because I have a lot that are like super scenic and just absolutely beautiful. Obviously, the easy ones that come to people's minds, you think Alaska and Hawaii. Hawaii, you know, it's an interesting course. You start near the airport. It was the Maui Marathon. You start near Maui Airport, and you basically run to the coast in Lahaina. Lahaina? Maybe? Sure, something like that. It's been too many years since I've been over there. But like the second half of the race, you basically just hug the ocean. And it was stupid hot. It was miserable. I had 3 hours of sleep, another delayed flight situation, a whole thing. We actually missed two flights because it took too long to run the race. Again, love the stories. I do it for the story, I think. But I've got dolphins and sea turtles on my left-hand side the entire time while I'm running. I'm like, how can I be upset with this? Like, there's literally sea turtles playing right next to me.
A good distraction for your mind as you're running. You're like 20 miles in, you're feeling it, but you're like, oh, a dolphin, a sea turtle. Yeah,
this is great. Alaska was gorgeous. It was kind of a weird thing because I did Juneau. And you kind of just in these like evergreen trees, just pine trees on both sides. It's nuts, nuts, nuts. Bald eagles everywhere. Like bald eagles are like pigeons in Juneau. It's absolutely nuts. And then all of a sudden you like turn a corner and there's just like the Mendenhall Glacier that you're just looking at for 4 miles. And you're just like, again, I'll show you another picture. It's just like absolutely nuts where it's just like, this is real life. Like I'm running here right now. Like this is what I'm looking at. Just absolutely gorgeous. And then Big Sur is probably one of the ones like mainland that's just like, I'm literally getting chills now. You can't describe how beautiful that course is. It is ridiculously hard. It is so hard, that race. But it is so beautiful.
Is it hard because of the hills there?
Yeah, so the first 5 miles are downhill. It's a slow downhill. And then you relatively stay flat until about mile 10-ish. Was it 8 or 10? 8 or 10, one of those two. And then it's 2 miles straight uphill with two false summits as you're going around a curve. So all you do is you're just turning. So you never know when it's going to end. And then at the very top, it's like 40 mile an hour winds directly in your face. And and then the rest of the race is all just rolling hills. But it's great because they closed down US 1. So there's literally no one on the road. You never have to worry about anything. But it's like, yeah, the only way to get back to where you need to be is finish the race because there's no cars on the course. There's no one to take you back anywhere. You just need to finish.
That's incredible. And also, I mean, I can't imagine. That's one of the prettiest roads in America right there. So
yeah.
That's on my to-do list too. I have a friend up in San Francisco. I might need to visit him and check that out. You know, I've been a Big Sur before, but not to run it. Just sounds amazing. So those are some of the scenic ones. Do you have a number one favorite marathon that you would point to that was just like, this was my favorite one of all time?
That's still so tough just because they all kind of have their own little piece. When I tell people my overall favorite, I usually go with New York, just because it's an amazing experience. Just the crowd, the energy. I have, my grandmother lives in Queens, so I grew up going to New York, and just being able to run it was just, you know, I tried for multiple years and couldn't get in, and then I did. That's just amazing. And then another one that was, I'm looking at like my map trying to figure out like which one was really good. My PR was in Georgia, of all places, the Publix Marathon, a very hilly course. And people were very surprised when they were like, wait, that was your PR? I was going for sub 4, and I have a buddy of mine named Mike. I call him Dr. Mike. He's a sub 3 guy. He's a fast one. And he was basically training me. He put together a training plan. He helped me kind of stay focused on what I'm doing. He's an orthopedic surgeon, so he knows all of like the medical things to make sure I'm doing and not doing. And it was just one of those like, okay, I'm going to trust him. And he came out, he was in Chicago at the time, and he flew down to Georgia, and he ran the race with me. And he told me when to eat. He told me when to drink. He basically did everything for me. I didn't have to look at my watch. He handled it all for me. And, I ran a 3:59:30, and my goal was to run sub 4, and it was super close, but it's like, I still have pictures like of him like hugging me or like screaming at the finish line. It was just like this amazing experience. Like my wife is crying because my first marathon, I was training for a 3:40, and I had never gotten close to getting under 4 hours. And this would have been 2016, I believe. So, I mean, this is 5 years after I ran my first marathon, and I still can't break 4 hours. Like, maybe I can't do this. Like, the training goes well, and then I fall apart. Just that whole, like, as an overall experience, that probably means the most to me. But it's like an overall race. Like if I had to tell people like, hey, I'm going to do one marathon, what marathon am I going to do? New York City, hands down.
Yeah, I mean, New York's a special one. It was my first. I'm from New York, so I get it. The energy, the crowds. I mean, you got 50,000 people running. It's just, you know.
Which is absolutely bonkers. Like, you're on the Verrazano Bridge, and it's shaking. Yeah. And you're like, why is it shaking? Like, oh, no, there's just, like, 30,000 people on it at this very moment.
The electricity is unbelievable. But, yeah. You know, I'm excited to try out some smaller races, too. And, you know, it's interesting what you bring up with your friend. I think the camaraderie of marathon running is something I find really special, training with friends. My PR was actually in Philly when I trained with one of my buddies, and he helped pace me throughout the race up until mile 18. And then he was like, you're a bit too slow for me. Ditched me there. But I told
him. That's what my buddy said. You know, like I said, he's a sub-3 guy. Yeah. He ran a 3:59:30 with me. And he goes, that was his slowest marathon he had ever run. He finished it. Now, I had to go to the medical tent because I gave literally everything I had in that race. And I had to go to the medical tent, and he went, and he looked like he could run another freaking marathon. And I'm like, I hate you so much.
I know. Those people.
Yeah. It's just like, it's next level. And he's the kind of guy, side story. So I did a documentary about him. It was called, Chasing Heartbreak, his idea of trying to get to the Boston Marathon. He qualified 3 years in a row, but because of time, like timed out. Like he ran a 3:04, but the qualifying time that year was like 3:03:40 or something like that. Like he missed it barely. So he eventually ran sub-3, was able to do Boston, but then he also was able to do all he did, Chicago, New York, and then Boston. He got into New York that same year, and it was his first New York. So I did a film at each place. I filmed him in Chicago, I filmed him in New York, and I filmed him in Boston and put together this documentary about it. Chicago race, he was using it as a training run for New York, but his sister was running it for her first marathon. Wow. And basically the idea was he ran the first 20 miles at his race pace, you know, like a 7:05 or whatever his training pace was, something stupid like that. And then he met me and we had brunch until his sister showed up. And then he ran the last 10K with her because he stops and the people at the restaurant are like,
you okay? Are you allowed to do that?
he goes, do you need anything? He's like, oh, no, I'm good. He goes, I have reservations right now. Like he literally timed it out of like when the reservation was going to be. And they're like, do you have reservations? He's like, yeah. He's like, I'm going to use the bathroom real quick and then just change. And he changed into like some fresh clothes, ate some like chicken and waffles or something. And then literally got back on the course and ran the race. But we always joke because his sister technically has a faster time than him because he started before her. So she technically beat him in her first marathon.
That's incredible. And you know, I think that gives me an idea for a brunch-a-thon.
Oh
maybe,
yeah.
Maybe for Hangry. I think the brunch-a-thon, maybe do a half marathon and then a brunch in the middle, another half at the end or something like
that. I love that idea.
Well, yeah, I think we should do it and invite people that also, you know, are hangry, need food, bring them there at the halfway point. I love it.
That's great. That's
unbelievable. So tell me a little bit about your training program. It sounds like you're running long races. You're running just a lot of races in general. How do you structure your training and you know, what's sort of your plan as you're heading into all these races?
Yeah, like I said earlier, a lot of it is I probably put together probably about a 12 to 14 week plan. Again, a lot of my races are planned out. Right now, I actually have posterior tib tendonitis in my right foot. So I actually haven't ran in like 35 days and I want to like strangle someone. It's not good. Like don't bring a kitten near me because I'll probably strangle it. That's what I'm saying. I'll probably do that anyways. Bless you. But the not running for so long has been kind of ridiculous. But 12 weeks is usually my training-ish. And then the idea is, again, is 12 weeks of like ramping up, doing some speed work, some strength workouts. I do the Hansen method is kind of what I've been using, where basically I top out at a 16 or 18 miler and kind of sit in that range. You basically, it's a lot of Hansen method is all pace control. So it's making sure your workouts count. You know, you're doing a lot of speed work and what they call strength workouts. So it's like, I don't know, 2x3 repeats. So you do 3 miles at race pace. And then you have like a mile break in between that you're just going slow pace, kind of just helping with that pacing. But I use that as a base. And then really after that, when it becomes race season, which is usually just spring and fall, just with the way races line up, from there, I'm basically going, you know, keeping 30 miles a week, just be giving the bare minimum to keep the legs moving, keep things fresh, and kind of exerting the energy on race day.
Interesting. Now, with the Hansen method, are you not worried about not reaching 20 or 22 before the race? I mean, at this point, you've done a lot of marathons, so I'm sure you're comfortable with it. But how about those first? Were you always using the Hansen method those first few?
I was not. I was using Hal Higdon, where he goes like 20 or 22. And I think that's great probably for first timers, because it kind of gets you used to that. You don't know what that last 10K feels like until you're in it. Like, and I don't care what kind of training you do. You get to 20 miles, you feel fresh. That's fine. 21 is going to come, and it's going to suck. It's going to suck so bad.
The quad starts popping out for me at that point.
Everything you're just like, oh, this is great. These are what hips feel like. I didn't feel those before. It's an interesting thing. Technically, Hansen's plan that I do only goes up to 16. I will throw an 18 in there, which again is an interesting concept that you only go up to 16 miles. But I'm only going up to 16 miles when I'm running 70 miles a week. Mm. So the idea is you're getting that time on feet. You're kind of putting that muscle memory in, where it doesn't make sense that, you know, most training plans, let's say you do like a Hal Higdon, usually those are something like cross train 5-10-5, cross train 2 miles, 20 miles. It's like you did 20 miles in the week and 20 miles on one day. Like that shouldn't be. Your long run shouldn't match the rest of the week miles. And I've seen that's worked best for me. Again, it doesn't work for everyone. Everyone has their own kind of what works for them. But for me, I found that kind of loading the week, I'd rather do 4 10-milers during the week and do 15 on Saturday than do smaller and then just ramp up, because then you feel like garbage and then rinse and repeat. You're trying to do it again. I would not recommend it for first time people, but it is something that if you can get your body to that and understanding like, hey, I know what it's going to take to push past that wall that really exists. Then you don't really need to worry about those, that you don't need to put in 20 milers. Like, it helps, you know. I'd like to say I ran a 39 miler in February, and my longest training run 6 months before that race was 18 miles. I'm like, well, that's stupid. I didn't even run half the distance of this race. And I'm just going to go run 39 miles in the middle of the wilderness in Louisiana, which apparently also not flat. Didn't know Louisiana wasn't flat. I thought that was also flat.
I would have thought flat and swampy.
Very swampy. It was swampy. It rained. I think it took me 8.5 hours, maybe, give or take. Yeah, something like 8.5 hours. And I would say it rained for 6 of them.
Wow. Unbelievable. So love the training approach there. Definitely different. First interview I've had that's done it this way. So definitely appreciate that insight there. One of my favorite questions, I'm curious, what do you listen to during races and during your running training? You got any playlist recommendations out there?
I listen to absolutely nothing.
Okay, so no headphones.
No headphones. I did a race many, many moons ago, a relay race that was an overnight, and they prohibited headphones, which makes sense. You're running overnight in the city. It was called Relay Run Columbus. They only did it 2 years because it wasn't well put on. But you couldn't have headphones because you were running at night and through neighborhoods and that sort of thing. So I basically trained without it. And because I trained with that, I just had that mentality. I was like, hey, I don't need anything. And now, yeah, I don't, no headphones, no phone. Like if someone, it's bad that I don't probably run with a phone and stuff like that, because it's like, I could easily just slip and fall and end up in the river. Like, well, this was fun. But yeah, no, I don't, there's nothing. I just listen to nature and what's going on. We have a lot of nice bike trails around here. So you just get caught between the trees. And it's always nice when we go out to some of our favorite trail running spots where it's like, hey, I'm going to spend 2 hours in these woods. And you know, I'm not too far from civilization, but you don't hear a soul. You just hear feet on leaves. And there's just something relaxing about it. I mean, you have like, or is this, it's like, this is the road race in Rhode Island. It's like too many people. And Kayla and I always joke, like she takes pictures. She's basically my photographer. And amazing. The amount of people she'll say like, good job, way to go. And that basically just don't acknowledge her because they're so in their ears, which again, nothing wrong with that. If you like listening to stuff to kind of get your mind going, but I think you're losing more than half of your marathon experience if you're not just enjoying what's happening around you.
That's a great point, Jonathan. And, you know, I go back and forth. I love music. It just keeps me upbeat. When I'm training, I listen to podcasts just because I find it interesting. Helps me sort of take my mind off of the grueling running. But, you know, during marathon races, there's at least probably, I don't know, 3 to 5 miles of the race where I just take off the headphones. I pause, especially in New York. You want to hear the crowds, the bands, the people, and just the other races, the other racers. So I totally agree with you there.
Now, the Queensboro Bridge would be the only time I would have music, because that was the most like dreadful thing crossing into Manhattan.
That's the one point I took off the music.
Oh, no, thank. That was like, I was just like, give me literally anything, because all you hear is the hollow sound of footsteps.
Yeah, I love
it. And you're just like, oh my God, like, get me into Manhattan. And then, because you can hear the crowd.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Oh, I'm making it. I think it was the First Avenue is where you end up over there.
Second Avenue. First Avenue. You know, First Avenue.
Yeah. So you head there and you're just like, I can hear them, but they're still a mile away. And this is ridiculous. Like, please get me there as fast as possible.
That roar that you hear once you enter New York is just unmatched. I've never had a feeling like that. And I don't know. I love the bridge. I thought hearing all the footsteps was just unique. And, you know, compared to the rest of the race, right, it's pretty quiet versus, you know, all the other parts. Awesome, Jonathan. Now, let's just wrap up with a few last questions here. I'm curious, what kind of gear do you wear? You know, you're doing a lot of races, long races. You have some go-to gear that you recommend?
Shoes, I've been in New Balance for a while now. New Balance probably doesn't get the rep that they deserve on a larger stage, but they make great shoes. They keep getting better. Unfortunately, the version I wear did not get better. They like a sock insert where the Bongos, but I've probably gone through 10 or 15 pairs of the Bongos over the last few years. I'm a big fan of Run Rabbit, all of their clothes. I wear their shorts. They do not chafe. And they are absolutely great. I'm the I'm like a thunder thighs kind of guy. Like, I want to show all of the thighs off. So I'm wearing like the 3-inch seams kind of stuff. Like, show off all the legs. Like, let's just do it. Let's embrace it.
You've been working hard for them, Jonathan.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, that's, and then usually like I haven't had to ever buy a t-shirt, you know, with all the races and stuff. So I just wear previous race shirts if I can, depending on weather and stuff like that. But my hair is like, I got a nice mullet going on now. So I've got to keep a hat on at all times. But again, I wear a lot of the, what is it, like Head Sweat or whatever that brand is. Like, I've got a ton of those hats and they're great. And then, yeah, I mean, that's it. Beluga socks. Those are the only socks I run in. I don't care if they're $12 a pair. Like, I will never run in any other socks. Like, I have like 6 drying on the dry rack right now. I'm like, nope. I'll keep buying them and keep working, but yeah, that's probably my gear. I don't do, and I wear, I'll plug my watch, because Koros, if you haven't heard of Koros watches, they're a South Korean company. They're relatively new, a couple years old, but they make amazing watches. And the real reason I went to them was from a battery life standpoint. Like, I want to be able to do multiple trainings and or even long races. Like, you know, if I do 100K, I don't want my watch to die. And that's really where it came from. I did 100K and my watch died halfway through. Oof. Didn't realize it. And it's like, well, now my map's messed up and I don't really know how fast I'm running, what's going on. The basic Koros watch has a 30-hour battery life, GPS. And it's like, wow. Yeah, I literally charge my watch once a month. And that's me. I say I'm always wearing it. I'm not wearing it now, but like, with heart rate tracking and GPS and all the other jazz. But yeah, they're definitely a watch brand. I found them because of Sally McRae. She's a beast mode.
Awesome. And now I'm curious about your podcast, Run With Purpose. Tell me a little bit about that and why you started it, what kind of guests you have on board, and where people can find it.
Yeah. So yeah, Run With Purpose. The idea initially was a running podcast. I had an old podcast called Running Beer and BS. It was me and a buddy kind of talking like we're on a trail run together. Like, hey, just hang out with us. We'd have a new beer every week. We used to go to breweries and record and stuff like that. It was really fun.
I love that.
Yeah, it was a good, there's like,
gonna hang out when I'm in Ohio.
Oh yeah, for sure. There's like 60 something episodes on it. That's still on iTunes and Spotify and stuff. So you can check that out if you want. It's funny. You're probably not gonna get a lot of information out of it, but you'll laugh a good bit. We did one episode, we call it the crap beer episode, where we had all of our listeners vote on what beers we should drink.
Oh,
and I actually filmed it too, which was a very bad idea. But I think we had Milwaukee's Best, Natty Ice, Ice House. What was it?
Milwaukee's Best. We had back to college in Wisconsin.
Yeah, you're like, no, thank you. I don't want any of this. The Beast. No one wants the Beast.
Nobody wants the Beast.
But it was great. Oh, the High Life and PBR. Like, people voted for that. I'm like, that's fine. I'll drink that. Like, I'm cool with this. Like, thank you for making it a little better.
Yeah.
Anyways, but yeah, Run With Purpose. The podcast I do now. The idea was it started as a running podcast. And I was going to do more like running type things. And then I realized, like, really, that's not my purpose in things. Like, the whole idea is running my life with purpose and intentionality. And kind of getting comfortable with discomfort and kind of pushing the limits and seeing what I can accomplish. And if someone says no, I say why. and try to really get down to understanding what my why is. And that's the kind of people we have on the show. Initially, again, it was like fitness related people, but over the past few months, I've had like health coaches and just moms and just like any random person that wants to be on the show, that everyone has a story. So I'm like, hey, if I can give them a platform to kind of tell their story and share it, we can get something out of it. And that's really the idea, is that, you know, tell me what drives you. What is your purpose? What brings you joy? What does all of these things that kind of makes you who you are? That's the kind of people we have on the show. So yeah, it's a weekly show every Tuesday. You can find it iTunes, Spotify, IGTV. I do all the interviews are filmed, so they're on YouTube and IGTV. I mean, literally anywhere you find podcasts, you'll be able to find this. And you can also just, like you say, go to my website, flores.run, and there's a link there as well.
Awesome. And, you know, that's a perfect segue to my final question that I love asking everyone. My podcast is called Why We Marathon. So, you know, in a few sentences, can you just sum up really the crux of why you run marathon races?
I could, two words, why not?
Why not? I love that.
Like, and it's just, it's that simple. You know, it's everything we've been talking about today. It's just been that idea of why are we holding ourselves back? You know, let's keep pushing the limits and find out where they are. And along the way, you meet some cool people.
I absolutely love that. I totally agree with you. It's why not? That's the mentality. And that's why we run marathon races. So thank you so much for joining us today, Jonathan. Again, check him out. Flores.run online, and Run With Purpose is his podcast. So thanks again for joining everyone and listening to another episode of Why We Marathon.